Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. From WFIU, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats. Let's talk burgers, or more generally, the meat industry. Though veganism may be on the rise, meat consumption is too. We heard a Harvest Public Media story last week about plant-based fake meats. In part two, Frank Morris has a report on lab-grown meats. We have news stories on changes in animal welfare policy and robots to make cattle driving safer for workers. Whether it's fake meat, lab-grown, free-range, or grass-fed, it's clear that we need to find ways to reduce meat consumption. The James Beard Foundation's Blended Burger Project could be a delicious first step. We'll hear from a couple of Indianapolis chefs about their blended burgers, plus a wintry cocktail recipe from the bar at Farm Bloomington. That's all ahead on Earth Eats, so stay with us. Mark Chilla makes a guest appearance with the news for our first show of 2019. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Kate. Happy New Year to you. Our first news item this new year takes a look at 2018 in the livestock industry. For animal welfare advocates, 2018 gets mixed reviews. California passed one of the most aggressive livestock regulation reforms in the country, known as Proposition 12. The ballot measure placed a ban on small cages for egg-laying chickens, calves raised for veal, and pregnant pigs. Proposition 12 passed with nearly 60% of the vote. Groups like the Humane Society, the ASPCA, the Center for Food Safety, the Sierra Club, and Earth Justice all supported the measure. Egg and pork industry groups opposed it, along with PETA, who argued that it would delay progress on other fronts. Prop 12 and other state reforms are under fire from those seeking a federal ban on such moves. In December, Congress voted against an amendment in the Farm Bill that would have made it illegal for states to impose their own standards for animal products. The Farm Bill also included provisions to ban trade in dog and cat meat, protect pets at risk of harm in domestic violence cases, and expanding a ban on animal fighting. Broader reforms on industrial meat production did not get traction. In March, the USDA withdrew an organic livestock and poultry welfare rule that would have defined minimum outdoor access for chickens and banned physical alterations, like tail clipping, for other animals. Meanwhile, the meat industry is mustering for a fight against two big threats, including plant-based substitutes and lab-grown meat. More on that later in the show. And we might be seeing changes in worker safety for the meat industry in 2019. Cattle in dairies, feedlots, and meatpacking plants caused more than 1,300 worker injuries last year. Cargill Meat Solutions believes that it has a solution: the industry's first ever robotic cattle driver. David Dufrate, an expert in ag worker safety, says the 450-pound robot is promising.
You're providing a distance between the worker and the hazard, which is the cow.
A certified animal handler operates Cargill's robot remotely, putting them a safe distance from unexpected kicks and attacks. Cargill says the robot could also be used in the poultry and pork industries. Thanks to Chad Bouchard and Harvest Public Media for these stories.
And thanks to you, Mark Chilla, for stopping in today.
No problem, Kate. Happy to help.
The meat industry may be on the cusp of a major revolution, with plant-based products flooding the market. Products that taste, look, and cook a lot like meat. But an even bigger shakeup could come when companies growing meat from animal cells in labs scale up that process. In his second story in a two-part series, Frank Morris reports for Harvest Public Media that the livestock industry is trying to make sure regulators don't take any shortcuts with lab-grown proteins.
Kels!
Out on his farm near Paola, Kansas, Mark Nelson grows meat pretty much the way people have for thousands of years.
I'll give him a bucket of feed.
Kels!
They'll talk back to you, it seems like.
Nelson says the idea of meat grown in labs, or vats, as he puts it, presents a threat to his livelihood, if only a distant one.
When you start getting into that vat meat and all that, I mean, that to me is not... That's not safe, and we got enough problems with people jumping ship and, you know, going to other types of food sources.
Like plant-based meat substitutes. That market's growing by 20% a year, attracting lots of investment and meat-eating customers who like the environmental benefits or see nutritional advantages. But what really spooks livestock producers is something else. Meat. Actual meat grown in labs without the inefficiencies of breeding, feeding, and slaughtering animals. Joshua Tetrick, co-founder of the food company Just, says that will be a game changer.
You know, I grew up eating lots of meat in Alabama, but I didn't get the chance to eat the best meat in the world. And through this process, we're going to be able to feed people all around the world Wagyu hamburgers and bluefin tuna and some of the most premium meats in the world.
Just is one of a couple of dozen companies around the world trying to figure out how to scale up production of cell-based meat. It's promising. Meat companies like Tyson and Cargill are involved. But the technology isn't there yet. It currently takes huge amounts of money and effort to bring even tiny helpings to the table. Still, Tetrick predicts that his company and others will be undercutting traditional beef, chicken, and fish within a decade.
Probably the biggest obstacle outside of the scientific ones is getting folks used to the idea that we don't need to slaughter animals en masse and deal with their waste to enjoy a nice turkey dinner for Thanksgiving.
But the cell-based meat industry also faces a rocky regulatory landscape. Mark Dopp with the North American Meat Institute insists that his industry wants a level playing field, which, from his perspective, means regulating this new product just like everyday meat, but labeling it differently.
If these products are going to be marketed and sold and represented as meat, then the companies that make them should meet all of the other regulatory requirements that some company who's making ground beef out there has to meet today.
Livestock producers are lobbying hard to put cell-based meat under the USDA, not the Food and Drug Administration. USDA already regulates meat production, and since it also promotes agriculture, it may be tougher on the emerging industry. Federal regulators have come up with a compromise. Both the USDA and FDA will oversee cell-based meat. Now, Congress may yet try to take the FDA out of it altogether and leave the U.S. Department of Agriculture in charge of regulating the most fundamental change in meat production since people began raising animals for food. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Frank Morris.
This story first aired on NPR as part of a two-part series. You can hear more from this reporter collective at harvestpublicmedia.org.
Okay, Kate, I think it's time to talk about burgers.
You mean like lentil burgers? I'm not really into them.
Hamburgers, Kate. Who eats lentil burgers? Besides me, I mean.
Right. Hamburgers. Okay, what about them?
We eat a lot of them. In 2012, Americans ate 50 million burgers. That's 3 burgers per person per week.
That's a lot of burgers.
Yeah, and it's a lot of land and water, too. It takes 1,800 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of grain-fed beef. And we use 8 times more land to feed animals in the U.S. than to feed humans directly.
Wow. Have you heard about the Blended Burger Project?
Is that like the Impossible Burger I've been hearing about?
No. This one uses real beef, just less of it. I talked to a couple of chefs about it up in Indy. Let's hear from them.
It's a burger, and it's our secret bar burger. When we first opened 7 years ago, we had a burger on the menu, but we were selling them like hand over fist. And I'm like, I don't want to be the burger place. Check average wise and just the style of the restaurant. So we made it a secret item in the bar only. And so the regulars know about it. It's not on the menu. And we sell a half dozen or so a night. I think that's always the best sort of way with restaurants is word of mouth, you know, and people, I think, enjoy telling someone about a secret that they have or telling someone about a place that they know or a place where they're regular. And that's always, I think, the best kind of marketing there is. We bake the bun in-house. It comes with caramelized onions and aged white cheddar, a little bit of lettuce. And it's a hit. It's a two-patty burger, 4 ounces each. And we serve it with our fries, which are tossed in a bone marrow butter, and jalapenos. So it's pretty popular. Ryan Nelson, I'm the chef owner of Late Harvest Kitchen. We opened Late Harvest Kitchen in November of 2011, and pretty much all of the beef and lamb and pork and rabbit and chicken and duck is all sourced from Indiana farms. We do our best with produce when we can, when weather allows. I guess you would label us as farm to table. We have a gorgeous patio. We have a wonderful herb garden on the patio. We have all of our own herbs. It's my wife and I's dream come true, this restaurant. We're participating in the Blended Burger Project. We've done that the last couple of years. It's an initiative through the Mushroom Council and the James Beard Organization. And it's essentially just kind of calling attention to a few things. A, that mushrooms are nutritious and good for you. B, that it takes less resources to produce a burger like this than it does that's one that's all beef. To produce 1 pound of ground beef in this country, it takes about 1,800 gallons of water. And I think a lot of people don't consider that when you're, I mean, that's a ton of water for like 1 pound of 1 pound of beef. So we've got about, I would say the mushrooms represent maybe about 30% of a reduction of beef. And then lastly, or C, most important, it's delicious. Mushrooms and beef go great together. I think chefs have a position where they can lead. And we eat every day. And why not eat a little better? You know, both in a manner that's healthy or in a manner that's better for, you know, the environment. And, you know, reducing our amount of, you know, beef that we're eating is probably a good thing.
Chef Nelson's going to show us how he makes his secret bar burger.
Here's our two patties. We've got some shiitake mushrooms, some cremini mushrooms, some portobello mushrooms. We just saute it with a little bit of shallot and garlic, some herbs, a little butter.
And they didn't look like they were finely chopped.
No, it's pretty rustic. You know, yeah, pretty simple. Just salt and pepper, a little bit of oil to get it started. Go ahead and toast our bun and heat up our onions as well.
I love that your bun is made in-house too. That's nice.
Anna and Meredith make, sometimes it's up to 9 different types of bread in a day. So fresh bread.
Yeah.
Yeah,
nothing ruins a good burger than a crappy bun.
I agree. And also, like, I would say that the meat to bun ratio is probably one of the most important things of the burger. You can't have like too much meat, you can't have too much bun. So the double patty works well with our large bun. Those mushrooms sear up great too. It's the same preparation, just added mushrooms. Less beef. I'm gonna stick this in the oven for a couple minutes. Sorry, it's right behind you. And we've had a great response from obviously it's a burger that's enjoyed by our regulars, and it's been 100% positive. Yeah.
No pushback at all?
None. I'm not sure people would even notice if you didn't say anything. Man, why is this a little bit better today? Yeah, our kitchen's pretty small.
Yeah.
When we're all in here at night, we can like reach out and like help everybody can touch each other.
It's more efficient.
It is. Everything has its place. If something's not in its place, you notice it. I'm going to grab it. It's probably pretty close.
Okay. Yep. Okay, and then a bit of caramelized onion.
Onions for some sweetness and depth of flavor. A little lettuce. Then our remoulade sauce. It's kind of our secret sauce, if you will. Kind of brings it all together. We top it. And because it's such a large burger, throw a knife in the middle. That way it stays upright when it goes to the table.
Yeah.
Voila.
Beautiful.
I think that's a real American thing, too, is like sometimes you just want a burger. You know, like we're a, you know, quote-unquote, like fancy or fine dining restaurant, but yeah. Burger, you know, everybody likes a burger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially at the bar. Makes sense.
Casual, fun. 100%. It's kind of a knife and fork sort of burger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I love that. I'm tasting the mushroom.
The mushrooms have that fifth flavor, the umami, yeah. And that works so awesome with beef. The flavors just play off each other. Plays off the fat, plays off the salty. It just, there's a reason why we love burgers, because in a way, they're kind of a perfect, like, mix of flavors. Yeah.
Yeah, that it only adds. It doesn't, you don't miss anything.
100%. Yeah, it's enhancing the burger for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I like about it. I really hate fake meat and the whole trying to replace something or make it seem like it's something it's not. And with this, it just feels like you're just making it better.
I agree. Yeah. And we could probably add even more mushrooms to it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really nice. Thank you. Thanks for letting me try it.
My pleasure.
That was Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Restaurant in Indianapolis. After a quick break, we'll speak with Abby Maris, another chef up in Indy, about her blended burger. So stay with us. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net.
Abby Maris. I am chef and co-owner of Bluebeard Indianapolis. We do a lot of sustainable foods here. We do a lot of local produce. Try to source many different proteins and vegetables as locally as possible. We do lunch and dinner. We're open 7 days a week. We have a great bar program. We have a wonderful atmosphere, and it's just constantly booming.
Bluebeard opened in 2012 in the heart of the Fountain Square district in Indianapolis. They've had great success, and they've expanded their dining rooms and bakery over the past 6 years. Amelia's, their bakery, is connected to the restaurant, but it also has its own storefront next door. Chef Abby Maris is participating in the Blended Burger project this year. And just a reminder, the Blended Burger is a mix of beef and mushroom.
I'm very happy to be included in it. I think it actually makes a better burger than just a regular ground beef patty. You know, especially if you cook the mushrooms in a proper manner, you know, and blend them up properly. And then, you know, you can build different ratios. It could be whatever you want. But yeah, I definitely think that the 25-75 blended is pretty stellar. But I also like the hard roast of the shiitake. So I do have to go through a good amount of mushrooms to get that.
So could you describe your burger, the way that you're making it?
So we're doing, like I just said, 75-25 beef to mushroom ratio. The ground beef is from Fisher Farms, which is located in Jasper, Indiana. And we get roughly, if we're not grinding our own meat from them, we are just sourcing their ground beef that they already have on hand. I do roast the shiitakes off, and then I pulverize them in the mixer, or the Roboku, until they're pretty finely ground, and then I massage that into the ground beef patty, and I add a little bit of onion and garlic powder, some black pepper and salt. and then patty them out, and then I'm pan frying them so it gets a really nice crust developing on the outside of the burger. And then I put caramelized onions on top of that, and then some cheddar cheese, melt that down, and then the bun has like an herbed butter onto both sides of the bun, and then it's just a Bluebeard quote-unquote special sauce.
And does your bun come from the bakery?
Yeah, so Amelia's, they're doing a brioche roll that has sesame seeds, so they do make it specially for us every day.
Do you normally have burgers on your menu?
Yeah, I mean, at lunchtime we typically have burgers, and then Sunday, we call it Sunday Fun Day, is the menu, so we'll put like meatloaf sandwiches or burgers or tacos on, but yeah, there's always a burger on the menu somewhere. And currently it is on the menu for lunchtime only because it's been too successful. So we run out of the buns and the burger patties by the time dinner service starts. So
how do you think that this blended burger project, especially if it became more widespread, could impact our food system in a positive way?
It's hard to say. Hopefully it does work and hopefully it does pick up. I don't know why people aren't doing it more often with even out the title of the blended burger project. I would love to even just make an all mushroom patty sometime. I mean, I'm not a vegetarian by any means. If you knew me, I probably eat a cheeseburger once a day. I just had one of the burgers this morning for breakfast, so I'm very passionate about my burgers. And it's a fun challenge for sure. I did recently try one of those Impossible Burgers, and it is kind of strange, like with the soy protein. But I mean, they're doing a good thing, obviously, and it is an interesting burger.
What my response to the Impossible Burger is like, psychologically, I'm not sure I'm going to like it.
Like, I didn't know soy was supposed to bleed.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been lovely meeting you.
Thanks.
So what do you think, Kate? Is it going to take off?
Well, the burgers are delicious. But to make a difference, it's going to have to be a large-scale shift, not just a couple of high-end farm-to-table restaurants.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to start there. I'd say McDonald's advertising their burgers as at least 50% beef doesn't sound so appealing.
Right.
But eventually, it is going to have to be fast food and schools and hospitals. To get a reduction in cattle, it's going to have to be industry-wide.
You're right. But wait, what about mushrooms? I mean, they taste great in a burger, but are we sure that they're a sustainable crop? Like on a mass scale, do they use less water, for instance?
Lucky for you, Kate, I looked this up. It takes 1.8 gallons of water to grow a pound of mushrooms. That's a tenth of a percent of what it takes for beef.
Whoa.
I know. Also, a pound of mushrooms only generates 0.7 pounds of greenhouse gases. For beef, it's over 600. And the average annual mushroom yield is about 7 pounds per square foot. Also, they can create their own nutrients from food waste.
Wow, so mushrooms can even help with food waste?
Yep.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes.
It will. This is the fourth year the James Beard Foundation has done the Blended Burger Project. Seems like it's starting to catch on. I want to try one.
Who knows? Maybe they're coming soon to an institutional cafeteria near you.
That'd be great.
Visit our website to learn more about the Blended Burger Project, eartheats.org. This time of year, you might be doing a bit of entertaining at home, having a few friends over, or maybe you just want to make a festive winter drink for a change of pace. We're back at Farm Bloomington Restaurant this week, but instead of the kitchen, we're headed to the bar. Doug Spradley is the lead bartender at Farm, and he's got an extra special cocktail recipe to share with us, perfect for winter nights.
I'm Doug Spradley. I'm the head bartender here at Farm Bloomington, and today we're going to make a little kind of fun dessert cocktail that we do here. It's actually called our Bloomington Coffee. So the base of this drink was actually my kind of thought process of making a down-home kind of nice, like, creamy coffee drink based actually on what's called a Spanish coffee. That's actually famous in Portland, Oregon. So I wanted to actually bring something big town to our little small city. So first I'm going to start with is actually our latte mug. And I'm going to rim this with a lemon wheel. And then I'm going to dip this in sugar.
So he ran the wedge of lemon around the edge of the glass.
Now for actually why we call it the Bloomington Coffee, we use the Cardinal Songbird Coffee Liqueur. This is actually our base spirit. We want to have something that's a little bit sweet, but kind of tasty. So I'm doing ounce and a half of this into our latte mug. And then we're using Eldorado's 151 rum. So I'm using a half ounce of this, using a bar spoon. Press against the side of the glass. I'm going to pour this slowly over the back of the spoon, which will then actually allow it to float on top of that coffee liqueur. And now the slightly more fun that you can't see on the radio part. Light up this bamboo skewer. I'm going to light that rum up.
Spradley lights the rum with the flame of the bamboo skewer.
Now, we're caramelizing actually the sugars inside the glass from the rim, and we're actually cooking off that alcohol from the rum. So we're going to let that kind of cook here for a moment.
So it's a blue flame dancing inside that glass.
All right. Now, here's the tricky part, trying not to burn yourself. But usually I don't recommend any people doing this unless they blow that flame out. I've always kind of done it with a little more fun and pizzazz, just a little craziness. Adding the coffee kind of to the side of the glass.
If you pour the coffee carefully along the side of the glass, you can keep the flame going for a while longer. It's a beautiful thing to see.
There we go. Now the rum kind of is going out. This is actually our house whipped cream. I make it usually every about 2 days. So just heavy cream and simple syrup, charged. And then that same lemon, we just kind of use that as a garnish. And there you are. That is one Bloomington coffee.
This drink will warm you up and possibly wake you up on a cold winter's night. You can see photos of Spradley and his visually appealing cocktail on our website. We have the recipe posted there as well, eartheats.org. Production support comes from The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. Offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. That's it for Earth Eats this week. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everyone who helps with the show, including Avon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Abby Maris, Ryan Nelson, and Doug Spradley. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and I produce the show. We'll be back next week.